This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my
new series, Parrish.
My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life. You know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC+.
Talking to Death is released weekly, every Wednesday, and brought to you absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, we're back. Talking to Death. It's just me and Dylan today.
Hey.
That's because Mike is upstairs working on the next episode of Up and Vanished. We've hit that point where things are starting to meet up with real time now. It's a lot to unpack, and so we're going to jump right into it. From the moment that I first stepped down in Nome, you know, it didn't take very long before we started to learn about this guy that Flo was allegedly last seen with in his tent, who had her things. We eventually learned that this person went by the nickname Oregon John. Through some more digging, we eventually linked this person to a real name, which we're going to keep a secret for now. But we know this person's full name. And as far as we can tell, besides the theories that this girl Kelly was saying that talked about other people being involved, but then also sometimes John being involved too, that's the only theory running around town here. And so we really just put our detective hats on here and tried to find this guy. But I remember this weird feeling I had. I was like, man, this is perfect. It's almost too perfect. Like, the only thing that can go wrong is that he's not on this damn boat. And that's, we cannot control that, right? And when we got there, I hit him up on that fake Facebook account. And we learned that he was not going to be there. And currently, he's at home in Ketchikan. We need to change flights, pivot.
Man, it was an intense time, start to finish.
Yeah, we were having just full-on room debates because we didn't know the right answer. And, like, you know, I'm still convinced that there isn't a definitively right answer here. But we decided that we wanted to meet Oregon John. I want to talk to this guy. And from everything that I know about him, he's not going to talk to Payne Lindsay, this podcast guy. And so, you know, with the police having potentially no case file on this, in the moment for this particular situation, felt like it was the right thing to do. Got checked into the Airbnb, and we just started pulling out equipment, and I wore a lavalier microphone like a narc under my shirt. My iPhone recording, we had Cooper's Google Pixel recording, and we also had this, it looks like a car key, it's like a keychain, but it's actually a recording device. On top of that, you and Mike were in the back, behind us, just blending in as patrons.
Just watching.
Just watching.
From afar.
And you were filming on your iPhone. So we have video of this too, which is crazy. It was in under an hour or less that we had touched down in Ketchikan, got our bags, took a ferry to the town, got in a taxi, went to the Airbnb, got all of our microphones ready. I had been messaging John all the way up until that point, and we had kind of loosely arranged meeting with him later that afternoon. And so I wanted to get there with enough time to go find a place to meet with him, and then be able to suggest a place to him that he would then agree to, and us to have been there hours beforehand. When I first started trying to find this guy, it felt like a completely fruitless mission. He was a moving target. He was on this ship. I'm like, we could go, you know, fly out to one of these places, any of them, and it would take us 2 days to get there, and he'd be gone. And it's like, how do we, like, find him? Like, we don't have his address. We don't know any of his friends.
It was some really solid sleuth work to find him, to track him down, find out where he'd be, convince him to come to that place, have it all set up and prepared. I mean, so much time and effort went into it.
And not to leave the listeners hanging here, we do talk to John. You know, it ended, episode 5 ended with us waiting in the bar, and I told you that he walked in, and then you hear John, the real Oregon John, and myself and Cooper saying, hey, what's up? And, you know, we ended up talking to John for several hours in the bar. And you're going to hear a lot of that in the next episode. So I'll give that to you. There's beyond just this being a show where we're not going to tell you everything at once. The real main reason that I'm not going to divulge too much right now is because this is the last week I have before statements that are said are out there permanently forever. And I know how much that can change the people that I'm talking to in this case right now. People who may know something, who saw something, you know, I want to dig a little bit deeper into right now before those things become known to see the before and after, because you can't get that time period back. And so I won't go into great detail about what he talks about, but to not leave you hanging, we did it. We talked to him for a couple of hours, and it's all recorded and on video, and it's what you think it is. Like, it's putting myself out of my comfort zone again when I didn't have to. I don't have to try and find out what happened and, like, stay true to the premise and the goal we set out to achieve, which is find out what happened to Florence. It was a conscious effort from all of us to go the extra mile and really try to push the boundaries for a good cause. In doing a season 4, that was the only way I could do it. And if I wasn't willing to do that at this stage in my career, this point in my life, with what Up and Vanished has been, is, and will become, and just the impact it's had on true crime in general, I owe it to myself to do this, and I owe it to the family of the victim that we're talking about. And I can sleep good at night knowing that I've given it my all. Today's guest is a very special guest. His name is David Robinson. We went to Orlando to go to CrimeCon, which is a conference that happens once a year where true crime fans and authors, journalists, producers, investigators, detectives, and actual victims' families all meet in the same place. It's a very bizarre event, but there's been a lot of good things that have happened, and I got to speak to a man named David Robinson, and his son went missing several years ago, and he is actively, avidly trying to find him. We talked about his story, and we talked about his disappearance, and where the investigation is today, and what we can do to support his current investigation and try to help him solve this thing. Through his son's disappearance, he's become an advocate for the families of other missing persons. If you want to help and support David Robinson's mission to find his son, Daniel, just go to pleasehelpfinddaniel.com. Our next guest on Talking to Death, David Robinson. So how you doing, man?
I'm doing well as I can.
I bet it's been a busy week for you, or weekend.
It has been productive, though. It's been very productive. So I got a lot done and got a lot of resources that I've been looking for.
So tell me what you're doing here in Orlando this weekend. What's your mission here?
Right now here in CrimeCon, my mission is to get my son's story out. This is one of the most crucial parts of any missing person case, you know, to get that story out. Getting that name out, that brings resources and everything you need to find those persons, a person that may know something or have some answers, you know, things like that. So I'm looking forward getting the information out about my son.
Why do you think that's an important thing to do in a cold case like that? Why do you see so much importance in showing your face and meeting people and getting awareness out there?
Yeah, and you know, just like I say, you know, just having that awareness out there, getting people engaged. Anytime people are engaged, that also help law enforcement keep that case active, because once the interests of the public, the interests of families seem to kind of dwindle down, kind of give it shade where this case can become a cold case. It's also a good opportunity for new, fresh leads, you know, so the information out there that maybe somebody heard something. So, yes.
So I guess part of it's kind of even just keeping some pressure on law enforcement. If it's in the zeitgeist, you know, it tends to be of more of a priority for them if it's in their face constantly.
That's right. And especially in Daniel's case, you know, currently I'm trying to get his case moved over to a different jurisdiction. And with that, you know, sometimes law enforcement tend to want to move slowly. They even have sometimes things I believe is police, the cold blue type, you know, atmosphere they have with each other. And so the public pressure, the public engaging can kind of help push them along and make them get a process a lot faster.
For someone who hasn't heard your son's story, tell me a little bit about that. What happened?
Well, you know, Daniel, he's a geologist, you know, grew out of South Carolina, graduated from the College of Charleston in Charleston, South Carolina. My son ventured out to Arizona straight out of college to pursue his dreams. He, you know, landed his first job with a company called Matrix New World. It's an engineering company. They hired him as a field geologist, also called a hydrogeologist. His jobs are very important. So he go out to various well sites to areas where they have to test groundwaters. Groundwaters is something Arizona uses, a desert state. They use to get water to their community.
Like water deep in the ground?
That's right. Okay, water deep in the ground. And, you know, being a scientist, his job is to help determine if those groundwaters can support a community. So by law, it had to be 100 years of water. So that's what he does.
Okay. So he was out there doing that. And tell me about how you discovered that he was missing at some point.
Well, I'm a retired military guy doing what military people do, relaxing.
Good for you.
Yes, that's right. And received a phone call from my daughter, who had a coworker of Daniel's come to her apartment to see if he was there. And that alerted us that something was wrong immediately. You know, so doing our due diligence, of course, the first thing we did is try to reach out ourselves, send my daughter to her. His apartment to see if he was there. He wasn't, the vehicle wasn't there. Light was on inside. So after doing all of that, that's when I look at the time, how long it was since the last person seen Daniel. They say it was over 6 hours. That's something out of the ordinary. Daniel just wouldn't.
That was already weird to you.
That is, because it's out of character. You know, sometimes, you know, families we can tell because we know the character of a person.
Yes.
You know, so, yes.
So you knew pretty early on that this was odd, and so you went into, okay, let's figure out what's going on and taking next steps.
Yes.
And so when you did that, as you started making those phone calls and talking to other people, what did you start learning in those first couple hours in that first day?
Well, you know, just the first few hours, you know, of course, I was gathering more information from his company, you know, things like where he exactly located. But, you know, of course, my first initial thing was to reach out to law enforcement to try to get at least a welfare check, you know, because I still want to kind of have my due diligence there to make sure everything's all right, get him to get inside his apartment, make sure there's no foul plays happening,
sure,
something
yeah.
going on, you know, and kind of go from there. So that's the first initial stuff we're doing, learning about where his detail of location that he should have been or he was last seen.
When you eventually discovered that he was missing to a degree here, what were the circumstances that you stumbled upon? Where did it take you to next?
Well, like I said, I was in South Carolina, so I'm over 2,000 miles away. All my anything I had to do at the time was relying on law enforcement, you know, yeah. And that's what just me constantly calling them.
You're calling the station from your end, different time right. zone, and
right.
just trying to, I guess, you know, find out anything, right? What was the status at that point?
Well, law enforcement just had to, you know, get information themselves. They was calling, of course, the job and trying to find a little information themselves. And also, you know, kind of riding in the area, up and down the area to see if it's something simple as him having a flat tire stuck somewhere. Because, you know, the road that's outside of that desert is a very long. They call it a road to nowhere. So it's right. very long.
What and part it, of Arizona is it?
It's in Buckeye, Arizona. Buckeye, okay. Arizona. That's 40 miles west of Phoenix.
Okay. So very rural.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Very, very, very deserty, remote parts of that state.
I can only imagine that during that time period and the initial stages, you have to be thinking that at any moment you're going to find him or get that call and just be, oh God, like, you know, I was freaked out. And days go by and some new reality starts kicking in. And I can't imagine what that would be like. Could you describe that a little bit to me?
Well, you know, initially, just being, to be honest, a person of color, yep. it was very challenging for me to be 2,000 miles away. And here I am calling law enforcement to do a welfare check.
Yeah.
My idea was hesitant for a quick moment to see if I even wanted to do that phone call because I was thinking maybe they'd go there and it turns into something else. Say, oh, we had to end up shooting them for some reason. And so some of the things that comes across the mind to be kind of weary is, kind of worried about even calling law enforcement. But as time went by, of course, I've been learning that law enforcement in my son's case wasn't, I guess because Daniel's a grown adult, they didn't see a need to really go search. So I had to go leave immediately and get in my car and start heading west and go do it myself.
So you were hesitant to even call law enforcement in the first place, even though you were starting to realize you might need their help.
Yes.
Really, because you're black and your son's black, and you were afraid of involving yourself and getting some other mistreatment or something worse happening.
That's right.
Is that what you were thinking? Or
that's right. And I wasn't there to observe and know what's going on and make sure I can protect my son from law enforcement.
Yeah, you don't want to send right. somebody here. And
right. And it turns
we've
out
all seen horror stories and videos on the right. internet.
That's right.
So right. Eventually, you decided that you need some outside support.
That's right.
And so you called them, and at what capacity did they speak to you, and how have they been working on this case or not?
Well, law enforcement hadn't been doing the thing initially. You couldn't imagine the first helicopter search that I asked for happened almost 3 days after he went missing.
Really?
But when I found out the day of, when I found out information that my son was actually missing in the desert, I asked law enforcement to go out that night, go search my son. They told me they couldn't do so until the morning because, you know, I'm a military guy. I know this wasn't true. Helicopters can't fly at night. That's definitely not true. But then when they broke the promise, they called the next day. They called me the next day and said it was unauthorized and canceled. He's a grown man. He can disappear if he want to. That's when I grabbed everything I could in my home and threw it in my car and started heading west to go do it myself.
So out there, Where are his things? What do we know are the last places he was and who he had talked to last and anything that was left behind that was the closest to him?
Well, as I was traveling, I started learning more information about my son, what's happening that day. I learned that he was with one other person. He met someone out in that desert. He met someone on Sun Valley Parkway. It's a road. He followed this guy into that desert. They went to the well site. So I did learn that there's only one person and my son at this location where my son went missing. So when I got in town, that was the first thing I did is went out and start my own investigation and start interviewing this person that was last seen with my son.
So why is it that your son was with this person and they both went out here together, but only one person came back?
Well, yes, they did. My son had two assignments that day, two well sites, like I said, and he had to reach out to this other person who was already at the well site waiting. My son made it to Sun Valley Parkway. The person met him on the roadway. From my understanding, they had a brief conversation, and my son followed him back into that desert, 1 mile west, 2 miles north, to get to this well. And they sat there they got there around 9 o'clock that morning. At 9:15, this person said my son just waved to him, got in his vehicle and drove off. And that's when never heard of Daniel ever again. So that's the story initially.
Was his car anywhere nearby?
No, the vehicle showed up 30 days later. You know, of course, by that time, I was already in the desert searching for my son. I had searches every week with over 300, sometimes 500 people. But we out there searching 30 days, almost 30 days later, the vehicle showed up in a little farther, about 3 miles, a little over 3 miles away from that well site. It's farther into the remote part of the desert, down in 20-foot ravine lying on his side. So it was found by a rancher who owned that lands out there.
Was that a location that would make sense for his car to be at?
No, it would not. It would not, okay, because it's it's a lot farther from the roadway. Like I said, Sunvilla Parkway is the main that road there. It's further out into the desert. It's going out west to nowhere. So, you know, it don't make sense at all.
So how do you rationalize that then? Where does that fit in your head there?
Well, initially, I didn't know what to say. I had to listen to what law enforcement had to tell me. They told me that they felt that he drove straight from the well site for whatever reason and listened to the only person's story. His story was that he followed my son's track and it led out to that direction out west. But I had to listen to that story and go what law enforcement gave us. He went down a ravine, he flipped the road, he had a severe head injury, he kicked his way out the sunroof. Head injuries make you shred your clothes, and that's why his clothes, everything he was wearing on his body was 3 feet away, and he went on the tree, cool off, and died probably, and the animal got him. Things like that. He joined a monastery, become a monk. Things that law enforcement gave me, yes.
What was the last one you said?
He may have just, from the detective of the department, suggested that maybe my son just wanted to be away from his family, joined a monastery, became a monk, is what I was told. That's what made me get a private investigator.
Obviously, he can't be serious.
Yeah, well,
and if he's joking, that's even worse.
So. It's even worse in the time like that. But yeah, that's exactly the initial things I have gotten from law enforcement that caused me to get a second opinion. That's why, you know.
Well, that about sums up, I would assume, how much help they've provided.
Right. That's right.
So what was the condition of his car and what kind of physical evidence was around there? Did it seem like there had been a wreck or a crash or what did it appear like to you?
Well, to me, it's like a crime scene when I saw the pictures, you know, what law enforcement, because it's lying on the side. Anytime law enforcement say, hey, his clothing on the ground. I didn't know he was like fully undressed. They say, hey, or dad would say, do your son wear boxers or briefs? I'm like, well, how would I know that? He's a grown man.
Right.
But he said, well, everything, his underwear down to his sock, everything's in the pile.
So all of his clothes were completely taken off. So he would have been naked at some point.
Right. And then the fact that me and my family was calling his cell phone, it was constantly ringing until I guess it finally died. And then they found the phone in the vehicle. I thought foul play. That's the first thing I saw.
So out there where he was, did he have his cell phone on him out there?
Yes, he did.
And like, did he get service out there? Like, were calls able to go through?
Yes. And in my 49 weeks of surgery, yes. I never dropped a call out there. So, okay. Yes, you definitely get service.
That's interesting
there.
Then.
Yes.
Is there any data in the cell phone that could give us any more information in terms of if it went anywhere else or if it always stayed there? Or
that's something we just don't have. That's the first thing. Before the vehicle showed up, we asked law enforcement. We're trying to get them to get cell phone pings. They say they couldn't get it. We tried to get camera footage. They couldn't get it. My son had a Uconet in his vehicle. It's almost like an OnStar system. And they claim when they went through it, it gave all zero grids. That's what law enforcement telling us. So nothing was provided where all the tools that were there to give us locations and video or something, law enforcement claimed they could not get, you know, so those type deals.
I've heard in some cases that a family member can petition with the cell phone carrier, and oftentimes they do give it to you. I mean, yes. You'd be the only person who could probably get that.
Yes.
But yeah, I would just try to go around those guys.
Yeah, we did. And that's what we're currently
doing. Okay,
good.
Yeah.
You
had any luck with that?
Not yet.
What do they say when you do that? I don't even know what that process is like.
It's rough. I've been meeting with some of the lobbyists and some of the other folks this meeting, trying to get them to release our data. It's actually my son's phone was my daughter's service. So it's her data. And
exactly.
Trying to get it from them. So we're trying to get some things done to make sure we receive that. I even going as far as trying to help get laws passed to bolster that through these telecommunications departments, phone companies and things to make sure that it's our data we should be able to get in circumstances like that.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day. Because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Him being missing, and you see this weird scene with the car and the clothes. What do you start piecing together in your head in terms of like trying to figure out how it looks like this and why this is the way it is, and he's nowhere to be found? You know, does your mind like put together scenarios?
I couldn't put anything at first. I just listened, like I said, to what law enforcement had to say. Uh-huh. But once I got my private investigator, he's an accident reconstructionist. He immediately looked at the scene and said, hey, no, this is not right. It's a stage event. He felt like it was, but he wasn't too sure until he physically examined the vehicle. Of course, you guys, if you know the story, law enforcement, the vehicle's found on the 19th, on the 20th, they gave the vehicle over to me, everything for safekeeping. Like, hey, he's coming back for his things. So I was able to have my investigator to go through that vehicle, and he initially immediately saw something not right. There was the damaged the mesh terrain. There was red transfer paint on the side of the vehicle. There's nothing red in the desert. Lying on the side. Also, once he got to examine the black box data, there was 11 miles astral on the vehicle after the crash.
What does that mean?
After the airbags deployed,
somebody
drove the vehicle 11 miles, additional miles. I didn't know vehicles could do that once the airbag deployed, but that's what he says. And also, the data on the black box showed there was 46 initial cycles. That means the vehicle's cranked 46 times after the airbags deployed. And so it'd be physically impossible for a vehicle sitting on the side and somebody sitting there cranking it up 46 times. So, you know, he always had all the information he had, and knowing that the vehicle was actually that stage event was put there. Coupled with the person who found the vehicles was the rancher. The rancher found the vehicle on July the 19th. He was out there on July the 17th in that same ravine because his cattle goes through there to go to a corral. And it wasn't there on the 17th, but then he came back on the 19th. It was sitting there.
And so he stopped responding on the 17th?
Well,
or no?
Daniel didn't stop. He stopped responding the day he went missing.
So which day was that?
That was June the 23rd of 2021.
Okay.
Yes.
So this other person who was out there with him, I mean, is that just not automatically who people should be looking at, or is this getting clear?
That's what I would say.
We're running out of, I think, thinking beyond that, until you clear that, it's not even where you should be looking. It's like,
right.
And what's your assessment of that? I mean, I'm not going to put you on the spot to like say anything about him, but like, Is that what's going on?
I don't believe the story. He gave me the story like I told you.
Okay. What was your bullshit meter on this person?
Because he changed his story.
Did he?
Changed his story. Of course, I had no reason not to believe his story. This is what law enforcement gave me. Once I got to Phoenix, Arizona, I made arrangements to meet this guy in the same place my son met him, right on the side of Sun Villa Parkway. He initially sent someone else from that well site. I don't know who this guy was. I thought it was him. The guy acted really strange, tried to get me in the vehicle, and he was asking me why I wanted to speak to him. And then when I finally got past that part, the guy went and made a phone call out of earshot. He actually saw that I was in earshot. He moved his vehicle forward, had a conversation with Ken. His name is Ken, the guy. And then he rolled back and said, well, Ken said he's going to come on up. So he kind of came up there. Ken got his vehicle. First thing he did, he had a utility truck, put his hand in the vehicle. I'm a military guy. I wash hands. That's what we're trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
He moved his hand movements as if he was holding a weapon inside his compartment, his utility truck. And I guess once he figured that I wasn't a threat, I guess,
right.
I told him I was up here trying to get information. He started talking to me. Once he did that, he gave me, it's almost like it was a written thing. He said word from word what the law enforcement officer told me. I mean, it's word from word. But then when he got comfortable, because I used a technique that I learned in the military to make a person feel really comfortable.
And then when
he
did that?
That's when he changed his story.
How'd you do that? How'd you make him feel comfortable?
Well, you know, you'd be very agreeable, you know,
right.
Things like, look, hey, man, you know, he say, man, you know, if I know your son's, it's not your fault that he's missing, you know, make him feel
validate
part,
this,
right, yeah. Part of everything. So that's when he start releasing more information, like something that he didn't tell law enforcement. Oh, I stayed left of the tracks, make sure I didn't stir him because I knew law enforcement was going to come. This thing going to go national. And, oh, yeah, he said.
Yeah, why are you thinking like that?
Right.
At that point in time.
And if you want to take, and I can be honest with you, you listen to a story, it would actually take you to where, near where my son's vehicle was actually going to be found. So I can't say that. But I gave all this information to law enforcement. I have the notes that I was written. I had the videotapes. I had, you know, I have people with me, witnesses. I had my
That's
daughter.
That's good. Yeah, just build that case just internally.
Yes.
Hopefully that comes into play at some point.
It wouldn't, because law enforcement dropped and said, oh, that's what he said, and they dismissed it. So that's where we're at on that point there. But that's the reason why I say, yes, the first person that, or the last person that has been seen with a person should be scrutinized, that third should be scrutinized very well.
Yeah.
The only person that was ever in the interrogation room, far as I know, in my son's case, was me and my daughter. We were put in the interrogation room.
What they need to know from you, other than?
It was horrible.
Yeah, your son is, right?
Exactly.
What their behavior is, what's normal and what's not, right?
Right. I think they was fishing for, and that's my opinion, a way to say my son was probably mentally unstable. He was depressed. And the reason why I say that,
okay,
because,
like, he had gone off,
right,
and ran
he
out
He did
here
it to himself, pretty much, right? He just wanted to disappear or whatever the case may be. And the reason why I say that, because, you know, first of all, they brought us in the back door of the department. I didn't never been in an interrogation room in my life. I'm not a criminal.
Yeah.
And I realized
I have once,
that.
And it wasn't fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't belong here.
Yeah, it's not fun. I didn't realize it. But they had us sitting there for, I think my daughter and I sat there for, because they asked the court, say, you know, you could think of anything that was odd and strange about your son. You know, we had to sit there for like 15 minutes to
like,
come up with something.
What are you getting at? Like, yeah. What answer are you fishing for?
Yes. Yeah. So only thing we come up with, my daughter, she said, yeah, I think about a week or so, it could have been 2 weeks, he was staring off at the wall. And they put that in the report. Yeah, he's staring off the wall. He's had troubles or something or the other. And like, well,
I bet they've been staring at the wall all day in their office. So.
Right.
But at some point you're like, what am I doing here?
Right.
Are we
right.
done yet?
I did, but was able to provide. In my position, I felt that I was being helpful because I want to help law enforcement find my son.
Yeah, you
want
to put that on record and do the due diligence,
right? The bank records, we was able to pull that up on the phone, you know, kind of holding in front of them and, so they can look through things. Cell phone, certain information on the cell phone was able to show him on the cell phone through my daughter, because it was her account.
Mm-hmm.
And those things like, so it felt like we was being helpful. They helped try to get some information about Daniel.
This person of interest, Ken is his name?
Yes, his name is Ken.
So
and I can't say his name because he put himself out. You do interviews and everything.
Oh, yes. I mean, he's clearly been talking about
that's right,
this, right?
That's right. Yes, he has.
So
yeah.
Ken, when you arranged to initially meet him, he sent someone else to meet you first, but didn't tell you that?
That's
just
right.
To check it out or
just
something?
Just to check it out. This guy's really
some
strange.
Recon or something?
Oh,
and
man.
Who was this person, though, in relation to him?
And I still don't know his name. That's the sad part.
Was
I
it
have
a friend
pictures.
Or was it someone from this company? Or?
I'm assuming somebody was working at the well site with them, because of what I did learn
okay.
is that the reason why I was able to go to that well area where my son was last seen, I was actually well, but like I said, the Sun Valley Parkway is because Ken, he since my son went missing, he was still at that well site every day. And so I was able to get back there. But yeah, the other person I'm assuming is somebody that was helping him out at the well that probably was taking my son's place or I don't know what his purpose was, but he was there.
Do you know much about that company? Is it a big one or is it like a small local thing or a family-owned joint or what is it?
Well, the company my son worked for, Matches New World, that company is it's not huge, but it's not small either. It's kind of somewhere in between. My son actually got the job because one of his great friends, best friends, you want to call it, in college, parents own that company.
Oh,
and,
wow.
So, of course,
they
when he graduated,
do?
They do. They do.
And, do they feel any sort of responsibility that this happened on their watch, potentially, or I don't know?
As far as the company say, I can't say they donated to my GoFundMe.
Okay, well, that's nice.
Yes, and that's really helpful. However, as a family, we were really disappointed because, like I told the owners, I had many board meetings with them. If it's your employee, I shouldn't have had to drive from South Carolina 2,000 miles. You should have had to search. You have the resources. You should have called law enforcement. You know, he's missing. You should have been out there searching for my son. He's on your clock, basically. So they haven't done any of that stuff. So that was problematic for us.
Yeah, and the guy who was with Ken, if that was another employee or a manager.
From a different company.
That was a different company
altogether. Different company.
So it must have been a friend he knew.
No, they never met each other in life.
Really? I was told, like your son hasn't or Ken had not?
My son haven't met Ken or Ken haven't met my son, but I was told in life. Ken worked
for. This is the first time they'd ever been out there
first
together.
First time meeting, yes.
Oh, that's interesting, though.
Yes. Yeah. Ken was already at the well site, like I said, before my son was coming there. My son did reach out to him. He didn't answer his phone. Make a song, some little back before I can tell by the phone record. Ken was already there. So my son was, from his company's point, said he's supposed to be meeting Ken out at Sun Valley Parkway, and Ken can take him to the well site where they'll be working. So it was only the two of them.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Like I said, the first initial, I didn't have no reason not to believe his story until I met him and listened to him firsthand. Of course, I had to do that. I had to do it. I'm a father. So somebody going to tell me something different from my son. I was a single parent, so I know my son. Tell me something different than what my son would do. He came to this well site and just waved off and disappeared. I know my son. He had two well sites that morning. He went to the first one, completed that supposedly, and went to that one where he ended up going missing. He wouldn't have went to the first one if he didn't want to go to work that day. So that's just his mindset. But so I had to listen to what this guy said. And when he did all of that and law enforcement not paying attention to his story, how it changed, And like you said, he's out now doing interviews to, I guess, validate himself or whatever. And I could look at his body language, and I don't believe his story. It just don't make something. It don't add up reality. The measurements, I even wrote the story that he gave, and it don't even add up because of the distance and the things staying left of the track. Nothing matches. Yeah, I have a problem with that when law enforcement is not taking those things seriously, and it's a problem for me that on that behalf. There's nothing I can do. I'm not law enforcement. I can't just go and grab this guy.
You can't grab the arrest, right? Know, but, yeah, right. Just, yes. But like, emotionally, does it piss you off?
Right.
Or where are you at with that in this stage? And obviously, you seem to be very diligent about the way that you're trying to network and get resources, which is super admirable. But I just could only imagine that there's a lot propelling that.
Yeah, well, you know, well, my love for my son is propelling.
Of course,
all of this.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the fact that I am a father, you know, saying that's my job, my duty, and honor to fight for my son. So that's automatic. That's one of the things that I definitely doing it for. But when it comes to seeing injustice and things not done the correct way, yeah, it's a problem for me. So my job right now is to try to encourage law enforcement. And just put these things out there for them and give them an opportunity to work on it. As you guys know, I'm trying to move my son's case onto a different jurisdiction. And those are the reasons why. Because when things are not being taken care of, then I have to do.
Yeah, if you're not going to do it, then I need to try to
get somebody else
to the right place where someone will.
That's right.
So if Ken is telling these stories about your son that don't sound like his behavior, that would mean that he's lying about that. Why would Ken be lying about any of those things?
Well, if it's foul play, you know, I mean, it's a lot of people, if they're, I'm not saying the man is guilty. No, I'm not going to put it out like that. But what I'm saying is if he has an involvement with that, of course, you know, he's, unless he's just ready to say, hey, I'm throwing a towel and I just want to come clean or something. You know, other than that, you know, people would not be truthful about certain things.
What do you think at this point it's going to take to get that resolution and close this case and find out what happened to your son?
Get law enforcement to do their job.
Yeah.
It's plain and simple as that. You know, I have, I'm still holding DNA evidence. I'm holding evidence I found about my son's apartment. They just need to process these things and find out who was driving my son's car, if it wasn't him. Who was in the passenger side, for instance, the red transfer paint, where that came from, you know, things like that. Is that really Daniel's clothes on the ground? Because we don't identify those clothing at that crime scene that they're claiming is Daniel's. Just a whole 9 yard to process, and they get law enforcement to do their job. I gave them everything. Everything we know to date about my son's case didn't come from law enforcement. They didn't contribute to the findings that we have right now about my son's case. That came from my own efforts, came from my hiring of my private investigator. And we just need them to process. We're not law enforcement. They won't go but so far. It's their job to do the rest.
How has the media coverage been about your son's disappearance?
Well, for me, it's been hard at first. I literally spent days and nights trying to convince just even the local news to take Daniel's story. If it wasn't for me running to local news anchors like reporters like Josh Sanders is his name and Nicole Griggs, if it wasn't for them, I would have probably had Daniel's story even on a local level. I had to work hard for that. As it took me literally 3 months to get that going. Just get that going. But once I did, I learned some secrets, things I've done on social media. That was a big platform for me to get Daniel's story out there. And once that happened, I was able to get Jory from MSNBC. And the reason why I was able to do that, I didn't go direct. Sometimes you can't get direct message to them, of course. So I look at Twitter, for instance, and I hit their friends up. The ones that don't have the little
check marks. That's how I do it.
Yeah, and that's the way, because I know the ones that don't have the check marks, 9 times 10 are friends or family.
Yeah.
So you hit them up and they say, and that's exactly what happened to the family members of her friend. Came to her and said, hey, have you seen the story?
Right.
And that's what happened to give Daniel's case a little boost. But at the same time, it was during the time the Petito case came to be. And then they start talking about disparities, and that helped.
Yeah. Was that a little odd seeing this, another story of a missing person getting really just kind of insane, abnormal coverage, even from any missing person's case? It was kind of an anomaly in that way. Was that frustrating in any way, or eye-opening to you, or how did you perceive that?
Well, you know, statistically true that, you know, people of color have less exposure when it comes to media coverage.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. But at the time, you know, a person like me having a missing son, I'd never known anything much about missing persons at all. So my whole focus was about my son. I was doing that, like I say, for the whole 3 months, just focusing, trying to get a story out there. I started my own searches at the time. So when the Petito case came about, I didn't know anything about it. I was so focused directly on my son.
Yeah, you
I had people
literally, probably, yeah.
Yeah, people pretty much literally hit me up on the inbox because I was make sure at night I thank everybody who's been supporting. Hey, have you heard of Petito case? Have you heard? I'm like, what is that? You know?
Yeah, right.
You know, of course, eventually I'm going to Google it and see what's going on. And then when I saw that, I'm saying, oh my God, the first initial I had was, oh, man, I think she was around my son's age, probably a little younger.
Yes,
but,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. You know, I felt bad because another parent going through the same thing I'm going through. And I'm saying, what's going on with these kids going missing? Because I didn't know much about missing persons.
Yeah, this probably feels like, right. What the hell's going on?
And that's what happened until my family started hitting me up. My family started hitting me up, David, you hear about this Petito? I said, yeah, I heard of something, but I feel sorry for the family. They said, no, you just don't understand. This thing is 24 hours, 7 days. And they know how hard I was working to get Daniel's story out like that. And they say, this is 24 hours. I'm like, but it just happened. I'm like, but I've been out here for 3 months. So it did make me feel a certain way, like working really hard for three months.
Yeah, busting my ass.
I can't get it. Yeah, I can't get it.
For 3 months, yeah.
But like I talk to the family all the time. My thing is they deserve that attention. Every family deserves attention. We just need to make sure it's all focus and everybody get the same amount of type of attention. Every case should be dealt with that way. That's not just one case.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a parent who's
still a parent
whose daughter is missing, and that's, you don't want to say that you should get less coverage or more coverage.
That's right. That's right.
It's more like, hey, if there's cases that aren't being covered as much,
right,
bring that spotlight over here too, or we need to work hard to make that happen.
That's right.
And consciously do that.
That's right. That because you know, of course, every family. I mean, I know the pain. Not because even before the Petito case, I was out in the desert with families all the time. Like I said, 300 to 500 a lot of times. And believe it or not, you have people who actually have missing people of their own was out there with me searching for Daniel.
Wow.
It's amazing.
That's
so I was able to hear their stories.
That was probably just hurt your brain. Like,
but the problem is, they didn't have a voice.
Remarkable of them to. Yes.
To do that.
That's
right. But they didn't have a voice. That's the problem. They didn't have a voice to tell their story. And I had to listen to that. You know, you can hear that pain. And when they talk about it, it's like it happened yesterday. It wasn't like, oh, even though someone was 20 years ago, it's like it happened right that day, that same day. That's how the pain for them is. And so, like I was saying, is every case deserves some attention. It's none is different from the other. It's the same pain. It's the same pain. They related to mine. I can relate to theirs.
Have you had a chance to meet the Petito family?
Yes, all the time now. Yes.
So, how's that been?
It's been great. I wanted to talk to their family for a long time. Uh-huh. You know, in the course of me fighting for my son, and one day I think I went with News Nation at one time do a story, and I guess they exchanged my information to the family. And I got that phone call. And he say, how you doing, David? This is Joseph. I'm like, Joseph who? This is Joseph Petito. Like my mind, he said Petito, but some reason still didn't ring. I'm like, this man saying like I'm supposed to know who he is.
Yeah.
You know? And then I say, he said, Gab is dead. I said, oh, you know.
Wow.
So, and we've been friends ever since. Yeah,
that's pretty awesome to hear. I was hoping that's what you would say.
Yes.
I'm sure there's got to be some sort of bonding that is.
It is. It's a club that you want to be a part of.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did meet them for a second last night, and they were super cool.
Yeah, they are.
And I love their take on everything.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
They didn't have to go out of their way to try and spotlight, you know, persons of color that are missing too.
Right.
Yes. Because of how much attention their case got. They could have just only focused on their family, and that also been okay for them to do.
That's right.
But for them to spread, you know, this tragedy to happen and spread the goodness that could come out of it at all around
is
just kind of very hopeful for other families.
It is. Like. It is. Because you can take anytime you can take that pain and actually use it like that. Yeah. And think about other people, have empathy like that. That's awesome. Yes.
Yeah. That to me was just a powerful thing to see.
Yes.
And, you know, makes me feel like there's hope here. We can work together on stuff and we all want the best for people. Right.
That's right. That's right.
So, what are you trying to do next in terms of, you said you want to get his case moved. you've done a lot of legwork on your own. How could I help? How could a listener help? Where do they need to go to support you and help figure out what happened to your son?
Well, currently, you know, of course, after all the 49 weeks of searches, 35,000 acre land that it was able to cover, the flyers, distributions, the petition, putting your voice to the petition for advocacies, et cetera. What I am at right now is, trying to get my son's case moved over to a different jurisdiction, which is
Maricopa. Do you have a petition County. Going for that or anything? Or how do you do that?
And what I have right now is called a mail-in protest. I have a lot of times families that always reach out to say, hey, you know, Mr. Robson, how can I help? And I'm living in Canada or I live in...
So writing a letter to them and saying what...
Right. And the letter writing consists of they go into pleasehelpfinddaniel.com, my website.
Okay.
There are PDFs there. They just download those and the goal is to get thousands of them going to that mail, that those are two law enforcement officers every day.
You can't ignore this. Yeah.
Right. And
build that box up.
And what it does is keep Daniel's case out there in their mind is also keep that pressure on law enforcement while I'm working, doing my part.
Yeah.
Working
exactly.
In the background.
That's not falling
and
to the wayside. That's
right.
Staying just as strong, but you're doing more tactical, logistical
right.
things.
But
that
gives everybody the opportunity to join in and help. That's right.
What is the website again?
PleaseHelpFindDaniel.com.
Is there a GoFundMe still? Or
That is. So also, it's on PleaseHelpFindDaniel.com. It's a donation tab. If we have events, there's events tab. You got help in other ways. If people have skill sets they think they can help us out with,
sure, yeah.
When I say us, my team and I, they can put their skill sets there. There's a PDF button there as well. If people can help me out, because I put out thousands of flyers everywhere. You could download your own PDFs if you want to print them out. If you want us to send you flyers, we just reach us at us at pleasehelpfinddaniel@yahoo.com, and we'll send flyers out to you. So it's different ways. Like I say, again, put your voice to that petition, because I am working with government officials. And every time I do, I say, hey, look, I got 150,000 people behind me wanting the same things to happen with the laws and the changes in the system and things like that. So that helps out a lot.
That's awesome.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to personally donate $1,000 to your GoFundMe.
Oh, wow. That's a blessing. That's a blessing.
Absolutely.
I truly appreciate that.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
And we'll post the links to everybody. And also, any other resource or anything that comes to mind, feel free to reach out.
Yes, sir.
There's people that I've done a series called Up and Vanished, and I've covered a different missing persons case every season. We do like a long form investigation, and we're on the ground really digging stuff up and poking around. So through that, over the years, I've met some people that are, you know, like a dog searcher or just different people in their fields that are experts that would absolutely love to assist if it was ever needed in that way.
Yeah.
Just let me know.
Yes,
and
sir.
If I could connect the dots, I'd love to.
So. I appreciate it. Because what I'm doing right now, of course, it's not just the mail-in protest to get his case moved over. I also have other things I have to take care of. I have a protest coming up. So that mail-in protest is also picket signs in the sense, send it to the department. And I am going to have physical protests if those things not being, the promises I've been given not
sure,
being fulfilled.
Sure, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just all part of the next step. So.
That's right. And the last part is also the search. You know, I have, like I told you before, 49 weeks of search at 35,000 acre land. I'm not searching the whole Sonoran Desert. That's just ridiculous because Daniel hadn't been all over the
whole Sonoran
Desert.
There's a finite amount of space that he could have gone anyways,
and
right?
It's about
what's
science.
That radius?
Yeah, it's about science. It's about how far a person can walk without clothing. So all that's based on that in any direction from the location that we know. But this last search I have gotten because they build and develop them out there, so it has some little problems. And also with funding, I'm really getting searched together for hopefully this fall.
Okay, great.
And I would need resources. When I say need resources, I need those specialized drones. I need cadaver dolls, search dolls, whatever specialized dolls that can help.
Yeah.
I do have volunteers that come out all the time with their razors and, you know, quad, all these vehicles that made for that kind of terrain.
Yeah.
We definitely need that. So I put those things together every time, but I always going to need those.
Yeah. Let me know when you guys do that or when you're setting up for it, and whatever I can help connect, I'll do my best. So
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And it is an endeavor out there in the field. It's just hard to search physically out there.
It is.
You know, it just is. Like,
unless you're on the ground, a lot of people don't understand it. I have people say, hey, man, you know, you've been searching for a while.
It's not a map anymore.
Yeah, now you're it doesn't work that way. Yeah,
yeah, right.
It's very intimidating too, because a lot of times we finish a search and I know we covered a lot of ground. Then I look at the area that we look and I look back. I'm like, wow, there's so much more. And I just
can't and you can't really even see that unless you're back there at the computer or whatever.
That's right.
So I totally understand. But,
right.
I'd love to throw as many resources at it as possible, but I think it needs a thorough search.
Yes, it does.
There should be something out there, or we should definitively determine that there isn't. And that tells us something too.
The scary part is that we have been finding human remains out there. Of course, you know, the human skulls and
other remains. Human remains.
Yeah, we did cover some remains to help bring closure for other families. But you know, so there's things out there that need to be taken, because the solace I have from that is that even though I didn't find my son, we brought some closure for somebody else's
family.
Which
is who would have ever thought that?
Right.
But so there's still it's worth the effort, because it's yielding something no matter what.
That's right. That's right.
You're going to get there. So.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Well, I appreciate your time today, and I know you've been busy. What are your thoughts on a crime conference like this? Is this your first time here?
Oh, no, my second year.
Is it second year?
Yeah,
okay, cool.
They brought me out last year. And
cool.
Just like last year.
At the Vegas one?
The Vegas.
Yeah, we were so busy. I feel like I didn't even see anybody last
That's
year.
That's right.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I have got out 20,000 flyers out there.
Like physically, like you did this 20,000
times?
My team and I. I mean, that's just impressive.
I had never been to Vegas. You know, how
much time did that take you to do?
We just went on the strip.
Okay, just went.
And gave it out. Yeah, and people was taking them by the stacks and everything. Just taking them, take them back to their state. Yeah, I want to help. And
that's
take
awesome.
It to the, I felt so great. I was like, I told my team, I said, let's take out 10 boxes.
Yeah,
of flyers.
Right, yeah, let's just go.
And let's go
hard
do
on
it.
This.
Yeah.
And just 20,000 of them. And they just went out like that.
Yes,
that's
went out really well.
Impressive, I'll
and
say.
And people from all over the place. So it was really great. That, you know, that was the best moment, I think, for me. Even though outside of Crime Con, definitely sitting on stage and,
yeah,
and meeting people. But that was the highlight for me, is getting those flyers out. Because that means Daniel's story is. It's traveling. So
how have the people you've met been? I mean, because, you know, I'd imagine it's kind of weird at first, I would think, with true crime being a genre of content.
Yes.
And, you know, there being fans of these murder podcasts, but also there's people, but they also genuinely care, or at least most of them do.
They do.
And they want to listen and help, probably. So what's been your take on that, or observation, just with these fans of the true crime and you're here talking about your missing son.
That's right. And that's how I got here.
Yeah.
The true crime community, of course, the podcast, and somehow they want to jump over to missing person cases and say, hey, can you come on my podcast? And I guess I've been so many of them, they started reaching out to CrimeCon. Reach out to Crime. They reached out to CrimeCon.
Kind of was connected that way.
They did. And then CrimeCon reached out to me and said, hey, look, we would like to have you out here at the CrimeCon. I'm like, what? You know, I didn't know what CrimeCon
You're
was.
You're like, well, I don't even know what that is, but I should probably go, I guess.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so when I got there last year, I was like, wow, it was amazing to be able to see the love and, like you say, the people that actually
care. Yeah, so how's that been? What have you observed? If people...
You know, sometimes they make you feel like you're some type of celebrity. You have people that come crying and want to, and I was like, I'm just David Robson, you know.
Yeah, and you don't even know this person.
Right, don't know. But it's the love. I'm telling you, it's like genuine. Like you said, the crying and stuff, it's like, these people actually really care.
Yeah.
Strangers. Don't know Daniel, but they feel they're so connected with the story. They're connected with my son and his story, and that means a lot to me.
How's that make you feel seeing that?
Like the searches, it feels good to see people come out and spend their own money, their own time, their own, you know, and come out to help somebody they don't know. That means a lot. I see the world different because of that. There's a lot of good people out there. Yes.
No, I love that. Yeah, we've met a lot of cool people here too. And
yes.
Everyone really, truly cares.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's cool to see people in person and interact with them and hear what they have going on or what they're working on or what their family's dealing with and just kind of networking and connecting.
That's right.
In a very niche place.
That's right. Yes, sir.
But yeah, I want to thank you again, and we'll put out these links and
yes, please do.
However I can help.
Yes, sir.
Let me know, and I got $1,000 for you for your GoFundMe.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I really, God bless you for that. God bless you.
I mean, that's a lot of paper, 20,000 pieces of paper.
Yes, sir.
I bet at Kinko's, it's probably not very cheap.
It's not, you know.
Or the library wouldn't be cheap.
Well, yeah, I found some that tried to get a little more discount.
You got to buy in bulk or something. Yeah,
those boxes, they cost. They're real expensive. You're right.
Well, let's load you up, man. Let's go. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts, created and hosted by Payne Lindsay. For Tenderfoot TV, executive producers are Payne Lindsay and Donald Albright. Co-executive producer is Mike Rooney. For iHeart Podcasts, executive producers are Matt Frederick and Alex Williams, with original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Additional production by Mike Rooney, Dylan Harrington, Sean Nerney, Dayton Cole, and Gustav Wild for Cohedo. Production support by Tracy Kaplan, Mara Davis, and Trevor Young. Mixing and mastering by Cooper Skinner and Dayton Cole. Our cover art was created by Rob Sheridan. Check out our website, talkingtodeathpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Talking to Death. This series is released weekly, absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, you can subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to tenderfootplus.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.